Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
This is Outdoor America with Tommy Bench. Outdoor America is brought to you by Wholesale Batteries, the right battery the first time. Now, here's the host of Outdoor America, Tommy Bench.
It has been yet another great week here in the Ozarks. Deer season, you know, here in the Ozarks, I say deer season. Of course, you have different seasons. But, you know, you have your firearms portion. You got your archery portion. Your alternate portions and alternative methods and all kinds of slingshots and rocks and pebbles. Just whatever. However they allow you to shoot these, to harvest these deer. Kayla and I have actually been out looking for a deer that I shot back during Black Friday, I think, is when I shot this deer. So it's been a while ago, and you know, it's been a tough season. It's been a tough season. I haven't seen many deer, but you know, we made the best of it. It's been fun. We always find something to do, whether it's deer hunting, arrowhead hunting, smallmouth fishing, crappie fishing. Here lately we've done a little bit of trout fishing. I'm going to talk a little bit about that and how we caught these trout and how fun it was. And we did that for our anniversary. We had a good time. It was a lot of fun doing that and catching those fish and just going, getting to do something different, changing gears and doing a little bit something different than normal. But speaking of doing things a little bit different, we're getting into trapping. How many of you folks out there trap? You know, it's just kind of a lost art. It's a lost, it's just not a lot of people do it these days. It's something of the old, so to speak. You know, people back in the old days trapped. It was a big deal to go out there and trap beavers, otters, fox, coyotes, I mean, you name it, bobcats. And so I've got an older gentleman, good for a friend of mine, that local around here where I live, you know, in his 70s. You know, he's been doing it a long time. And you know, we were just visiting earlier, and I told him, I said, you know, I'd really like to learn to be a better trapper, because Kayla and I are getting into trapping, but we don't know a whole lot about it. You know, I was never really around it much as a kid. And so he said, I said, maybe I can just go with you and learn from you. He said, you know, that's really the best way to do it. That's how I learned. And I think that's probably the best way for anyone to learn, is to go with someone that's been doing it a long time. You just can't replace experience with, no matter whatever it is. You know, they always say time on the water, time in the woods, time doing anything, you know, that gets back to the experience factor, having the experience and the you know, educating yourself, and that time on the water, the time in the woods, or whatever it is you're doing, is also going to pay dividends. And you just can't replace that. You can't just read a book or out there and watch a YouTube video and expect to have the same results as the guy that's been doing it for 30, 40 years, a lot, you know, consistently. It's funny, we talk about measurement of years when that really doesn't play near as big a factor as a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month basis, because I see people on the river quite often that are much, much older than I am, and you know, they'll make a comment about being on that river for 35 years, you know, 40 years, or whatever the case might be. And that sounds very impressive, and it is, but it's, you know, a lot of times I'll ask them, you know, like, man, I'm surprised I haven't seen you more around here. And a lot of times I get the somewhere along the same lines of, well, we don't live around here, but we come here about every two or three times a year. You know, they're down on the river a couple times a year, but they've been doing it for 35 or 40 years. So essentially, you know, they've got, well, if my math is correct, if it's for 40 years or three times a year, that's about 120 times over that 40 years. And You know, I'm generally on the river about 250 plus days a year, maybe 300 a year, to be honest with you. So, you know, it's just putting your time in, and I think that's where it pays off the most, is just really having a lot of experience and time and learning. It's not just about your successes, but it also is about your failures, you know, learning from your mistakes. And, well, I won't do that again, or, man, that didn't work out like I planned, and I want to talk about a few of my mistakes, because I'm making them every day, and I know I'm not perfect. I know I never will be perfect. There's only one perfect person that ever walked on this earth, and it's definitely not me. But, you know, I'm trying to learn from what I do wrong and the things that I do right, you know. So, you know, I'm going to talk a few about tell you a couple stories about some mistakes I've made. And starting off with that deer, I was talking about a deer. And it's just been a rough year for me in the deer woods. It really has. You know, last year I shot the biggest buck of my life. And I shot him. He was facing right at me. You know, it was you've all heard the story. He come into a rattle. I had a doe. They had been following a doe. Him and another buck actually was following this doe. The smaller buck come in first, and he was behind him. But whenever I seen him, I knew he was the one I wanted to take. Gave me a perfect broadside shot opportunity, but as soon as I got him to stop, because I only had a small little lane to shoot, as soon as he got in that opening, I went to go stop him. Instead of just stopping and looking up, he turned and come right at me quickly, and then stopped, and all I had was a chest shot. Of course, you know the rest of the story. I took that shot thinking that was the only opportunity I was going to have, and followed the blood trail, and it was a magnificent blood trail, may I add. And we followed it, and obviously, you know the rest of the story. I hired a tracker with a dog, and we found this deer still alive, you know, but not in very good shape, but he was still alive. And, you know, that was last year. That was the end of that story. Then fast forward to this year, I don't have a lot of sightings, but I finally see a nice, nice deer, and he comes up right in front of me, same deal, gives me a chest shot. This one's quartering away from me just slightly, but facing me. But he's kind of always quartering to me, I guess. Not away, quartering to. And I take the shot, and I think I smoke him. You know, I think, oh, I got this one. Well, lo and behold, there was a tree about 6 inches around right in front of me that I happened to just go right. So I still end up finding a couple of birds. I finally gave him an hour or so and followed the blood trail, Kayla and I did, and ended up him up, and he ran down the creek and then up the hill. And so, yeah, there's kind of following suit with last year's story, right? Just continuing the curse of the big buck challenge around here for old Tommy Bench. But anyway, I kept plugging away like I always do. I kept plugging away and finally got another opportunity at another good mature deer. And you know, I moved stands. I tried to make adjustments the best I could to try to capitalize and make something happen off the lack of activity I was seeing. And finally got another opportunity. It was a nice deer. You know, he kind of snuck up on me is what he did. And I'm real excited to tell you the story about it, because it was a fun story. It's heartbreaking story, you know, exciting and then heartbreak and then maybe some excitement again. Kind of a roller coaster of a ride of a story. But, you know, that's what makes them fun. That's what keeps me going back. And, you know, I learn from your mistakes, right? That's what I said in the beginning of this. I'm trying to learn from my, not just my successes, but my mistakes as well, and try to capitalize on them and do better. I said do best. Do better next time. And so, you know, I want to tell you this story about this deer and how it all come about. Like I said, I heard this deer come when I had moved stands. I had a climber, and I knew this deer was coming. I knew there was a deer, of some sort of animal, or human. I wasn't for sure, but I couldn't figure why a human would be walking through my woods while I'm hunting, unless it was my brother or my wife or something like that. So I assumed it was a deer, because most squirrels, you know, we've all been in the woods. Now, if you're a big-time hunter, we've all got fooled by the squirrel. We've done it more than once, and still will, and probably always will. But most of the time, those squirrels are very erratic. You know, they don't have a consistent sound, a step, 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 or better yet, the leaf crunch, you know, crunch, crunch. This is more, you know, I knew this was more of a consistent walk, so I knew it was a deer, or I assumed it was a deer. I knew it wasn't a squirrel, because a squirrel is usually, you know, it's just so erratic. You know, you can usually tell whenever they're doing their thing around the woods, and usually you can see them, but in this case, I was sitting on the ridge in the thick woods, and I knew this deer was coming. I knew that there was a deer walking up the woods, and I was just waiting for to see what it was. And as I'm getting my gun ready, I'm sitting in my climber, and I don't want to point my gun at a noise, because that's very dangerous and very irresponsible. Well, obviously, I'm not going to do that. You know, for all I knew, like I said, it could have been a dog. It could have been my brother. It could have been a little baby deer. Who knows what, you know, there's so many possibilities of what it could have been. But I'm just getting ready. You know, I think I'd only seen one deer at this point. And that was the one that I shot the side of the tree. So, you know, here I am trying to get redemption. And as you all know, I had my redemption buck last year. So I'm like, okay, maybe this is it. Maybe this is my opportunity to get my redemption. As this deer is walking up the hill, you know, I still can't see him. I have no idea if it's a doe, if it's a buck, is it really even a deer? You know, what is it? And sure enough, as it's just approaching, I could tell it's getting closer and closer and closer, but I still can't see what it is. Well, I'm getting my gun ready, and I've got, you know, got my old faithful 30-30 that I've been hunting with since I was a teenager, and it's killed more deer for me than any gun I own. And by far, almost all the deer I've ever killed has been with that 30-30. So as I'm getting ready, here this deer comes, and I still can't see it to know what it is, but I'm getting ready, and it's the anticipation's killing me. You know, I've been hunting all hard all season, and finally I just see deer legs. I finally realize it's a deer. Just wait till you find out what I see next, folks. You're going to stick around. I'll be right back to tell you the rest of the story right after this on Outdoor America. I'm Tommy Bench. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Outdoor America, brought to you by Wholesale Batteries, the right battery the first time. More with Tommy Bench after this. Listening to Outdoor America, here's more with Tommy Bench.
There I was, 6 foot up in a tree, waiting for this deer that's approaching me, 6 foot up in the tree. You say, what in the world are you doing 6 foot up in a tree? Well, I didn't want to sit on the ground, but if I got too high up in the tree, I was too many trees running away, I didn't have any clear shots. So yes, ma'am, yes, sir, I was sitting 6 foot up in a tree in a climber, and I made the adjustment because I kept seeing the deer headed that direction. So, finishing my story here, as we left on the last break, we're coming. I know this is a deer. I just know it is. As this deer walks up the hill, I want to take this deer. There's no question. This is a good deer. This is a big, big deer. I mean, as it was big enough, maybe the anticipation got the best of me. I knew, no matter, excited. I'm like, hey, I am taking this deer. So I pull my gun up. Well, keep in mind, as soon as I see this deer sees me, stops, drops his head just a couple inches, in an alert. It's like what they call the full sneak. You know, they're like, what in the world? It sees me. I see it. At the same time, I find the deer right in my crosshairs. Again, he's facing me. He's facing right at me. Another chest shot, right? Oh my gosh, deja freaking vu. Here we go again. For the third time in 2 years, I'm seeing a nice big buck straight on shot, and I'm terrified. Like, what do I do? And I'm like, well, as soon as I see him showing that he is spooked, he sees me. He's looking right at me. I'm just right off the ground. I'm like eye level with him. So I pull my gun up. This deer, as I pull my gun up, look at him through in my crosshairs, blows. And as he blows, I know it's now or never, Tommy. Either you take the shot or you're not going to get a shot. As I squeeze the trigger on my 30-30, he spins around as fast as you can imagine. He spins and takes off running the other direction. All the same time, I squeeze the trigger for a shot. As he's spinning around, he takes off running. Oh, no. What in the world did I even hit this deer? Where did I hit him at? because he spun around the exact same time. So no idea if I even shot this deer or where. There's no telling. Did I shoot him in the leg? Did I shoot him in the shoulder? In the butt? There's really no telling. You know, I have no idea because he spun around so fast the same time I was squeezing the trigger. So now I'm automatically thinking nothing but disappointment. Very stressed and worried that once again, you know, for the third time in 2 years, since last year, that I will be shooting at a deer or shooting a deer or at a deer that I will not retrieve. It's very, very frustrating and very stressful because I take pride on making good ethical shots. I've passed up a lot of deer in the past because I just didn't have a good broadside clean view shot. So I didn't take it. So here I am getting frustrated with, am I doing the right thing? Did I make a poor choice? He kind of snuck up on me and I just, it was now or never. I knew I needed to either take the shot or not take a shot at all, but he's seen me. So if I spooked him, I just busted my cover. Now, the next time he comes strolling through those woods, he's going to be expecting the possibility of me be sitting there. So anyway, I knew he was a good deer. In my mind, he was a very good, mature, big buck. I wanted to shoot this, harvest this animal, so I took the shot. Again, he was spinning around the same time that I squeezed the trigger, or almost simultaneously. So it was so hard to tell if he was spinning around because I shot him, or if he was spinning because he was spooked, which I know he was spooked because he blew at me. He looked right at me and whoosh, blew, you know, like they do. If you've ever been out there, everyone knows that infamous sound right there. So that's what happened. Okay, so here I am reluctant to even tell Kayla. Should I even tell my own wife? You know, I tell her everything. Literally, if I catch a big fish or see something really cool or neat, or if I'm having a good day, a bad day, she's the first person I talk to about it. She's my best friend, my wife, and my fishing partner, my hunting partner, you name it. She is my everything. You know, we do everything together. And so I'm reluctant about even telling her about it, just because I don't want to have the pressure and the disappointment and the excitement and then the disappointment and you name it. You know, it's very frustrating. I've already went through this twice. But I thought, well, I'm going to go ahead and tell her anyway. I want to make sure this is documented, the time that it happened, what happened. You know, it's fresh on my mind. So I text her and I said, the dang thing snuck up on me. She said, what snuck up? Was it big? I said, it was a good one. It was a good deer. Well, it snuck up on me. I took the shot and I said, I'm going to wait a little bit. Do you think you hit him? I said, well, I don't know how I could have missed him. But, you know, hopefully just pray that we find this animal. And so, of course, you know, she says, I'll pray about it. She prays about it. I do too. And I wait. And I wait about 10, 15 minutes. And then I thought, you know, I'm going to go try to find some blood. So I get down. I go right to where I shot the deer. I knew exactly where he walked up, exactly where I took the shot, everything. I can't find a drop of blood. Not a single speck. I see exactly where the deer took off running. I knew which direction he headed because I watched him. I kept waiting for him to crash, and he just kind of ran through the woods, and that was it. Just kind of ran through the woods and off in the sunset, as they like to say, right? Well, so I'm like, well, okay, I can't find any blood. Did I miss? I mean, did I completely miss? Whenever he spun, did he maybe crouch and spin so fast, pull some kind of matrix crap? I mean, I don't know what happened. I mean, I'm usually a pretty sure shot, but it's hard to tell whenever an animal spins that fast the same time you're trying to put a good ethical shot on him. So I walked the direction that he took off running, and I'm just looking for anything, any little speck of blood on a leaf, anything at all that I can find. I can't find anything. But I'm like, well, I've got to look. I've got to at least make a little circle where I think he may have went and look around. And I did. I walked around and I walked around and I looked for white belly. I looked for anything that, you know, that would give me the indication, oh, he's a big old buck, so he's going to have the right. It's kind of hard to hide a big old rack, you know, a big old antler deer. It's hard to just hide that. A doe, not so much. They can be kind of low profile, laying down on the ground and cover themselves up pretty good, or look like they blend in with the ground. But this buck was going to be hard to hide itself. And I'm looking around, and I'm right on the property line. Right on the property line is where I had walked all the way to, which is about 100 yards away from where I'm hunting. And I could never find nothing, anything, not a speck of blood, not movement, not a deer that spooked and took off running. It was like either he was completely gone or he was laying there and I couldn't find him. And so I thought, well, I'm going to go back to hunting. I went back and sat down, and I was very disappointed. You know, of course, I'm like, man, here we go again. Here we go again, the third time that I've tried to harvest a big deer in the last two, since last year. Last year, Big John. Of course, this year I told you the story, the first one, the walk down the hill, nice big old tall 10-pointer, and didn't get him. And then, of course, this happens with this deer. So, very disappointing. And so I go back and sit down, and I'm thinking, well, maybe something will walk back by, or we'll see, but I'm not giving up on this deer. So as soon as I'm done with that hunt, an hour later or so, I think, I'm just going to get up, and I'm going to look one more time. I'm going to look again, go give it a good circle, and walk around, zigzag through, see if I can see anything, some kind of blood. Maybe I'll find him. Maybe he'll just be laying down there, or maybe I'll jump him up. At least I'll know he's still alive, or whatever's going on, right? So I go ahead and get up, make that circle, work around, get all the way to the fence line. I'm looking around, and we're real close to the creek. This is a dry creek or a wet weather creek. So I kind of glanced down at the creek, didn't see anything, but it was kind of a drop off on the edge of the creek. And I thought, well, I might ride the wood line. We'll come back and look at the creek, or look better. But I mean, I don't see him. I was convinced at this point I just a clean miss. But you'll have to stick around and see how the rest of the story goes, folks, because I got a lot more. It gets even better than this, folks. We'll be right back right after this on Outdoor America. I'm Tommy Bench. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Outdoor America with Tommy Bench, brought to you by Boatworks, performance specialists. More with Tommy Bench after this. You're listening to Outdoor America with Tommy Bench, brought to you by Bass Tank. Whatever brand of fishing electronics you need, Bass Tank carry it. Here's more with Tommy Bench.
So there I was, looking for this deer, hoping that it wasn't going to be the third time. The third heartbreak that I've had in less than 12 months, since last season. I'm looking. I don't see this deer anywhere. And like I said, it was a big buck. So I knew that he couldn't hide very well. But I made it all the way to the edge of the property line. So now the only possibility that I could, that I feel like in my mind that this deer could have went was on another property. So I've got to get permission on another property before I can cross over. That's just the right thing to do, and that's what I needed to do. And without finding a drop of blood, there's no way of telling which way he went. I have no idea. Did he go, once I lost sight of him, did he go right, did he go left, did he keep going straight, did he circle back around? There's really honestly no way of telling, because deer do some crazy things whenever they're injured or hurt like that or dying. They're if you think about it, it's I guess that's pretty rough to think about, but you imagine what they're probably going through, that as far as thinking, it's now or never. They're just running because they don't really know where they're going, I don't guess. But either way, I didn't find a speck of blood. Here I am, total disappointment. I am very disappointed, upset. Didn't really tell a whole lot of people about this story because of how embarrassed I was. The fact that here I had shot another nice deer. And, of course, my neighbors, my good neighbors of mine, Melvin and Ken and my brother, like, hey, this isn't catch and release like you do your smallmouth. Ha, ha, ha. You're supposed to get that deer after you shoot him. I'm like, ha, ha, hearty har. It's how funny is that, right? But they just, give me a hard time. And that's all the fun in it, I guess. But I looked, I looked two or three different times around looking for deer. Fast forward, looking for that deer. Fast forward about another week later, about a week and a half or so, it'd been really cold. And I remember sitting in that same stand, and Kayla was sitting in her buddy's stand, and I heard these crows. Ah, caw, 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 doing what crows do. They're calling, right? And I text Kayla. I said, I think that deer's down there. I think I hit that deer. And I start reading all these stories, kind of rewinding, recapping, what's going on the week leading up to this. I had seen lots of stories on Facebook of people that shot a deer, never had a drop of blood, but they ended up finding the deer dead. And I'm like, man, that could be my deer. I bet I shot that deer. How can you miss? 40 yards away, I mean, it's not like I'm a kid. I know how to shoot a gun. I know how to put the sights on and be steady and squeeze the trigger, not pull, all that good stuff. And I'm thinking, man, I think I had to have hit that deer, even if I hit him in a bad spot. You'd think there'd be blood or, something. So I kept telling Kayla, I said, well, you know what? I think that deer's down there. I think that deer's down there, but I think it's on the other property. And so, you know, I never did. I couldn't get a hold of anyone to cross over before for that property. So I never really had a chance to do it within the next day or two, because I tried. I tried to get permission and just couldn't get a hold of anyone. Wouldn't answer the door. I didn't know what the phone number was. So either way, so here we are. Now we're approaching a couple weeks later. It's been like 2.5 weeks now. And, you know, time, you know, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind, but it's just bothering me. And I'm thinking, you know what? We got to fight. We got to at least try. I told her, I said, let's go see if we can look for this dude. Let's just go look for it. And so she's like, all right, well, let's go. And I said, well, I know the meat won't be any good at this point, but it would be nice just to have that closure to know that's the deer I shot and we found it. Did I think we was going to find it? No. I thought the chance would be about less than 5%, but I knew there was a chance. There was a chance that we may find it, and maybe this is our best chance because maybe there was a smell to it. Maybe we'd smell it, you know, get a scent of a decomposing deer. Something. I thought if we did find it, minimum, at least I could retrieve the rack. You know, get the head, maybe do a nice European mount and say, well, that sucks that I wasn't able to harvest that animal and feed my family. But, you know, at least there's closure knowing that the deer was not a clean miss. So here we are looking around, and I tell her, let's go walk over up this ridge, and then we'll walk around up there where the other deer had run, and just kind of look around. And as we're coming back down to that same creek channel, that same dry creek that I was telling you about, Kayla said, there's a dead animal right over there. And I said, where? She said, right over there. And I said, look over, and I see a rib cage. I said, that's a deer rib cage. That's a deer right there. And we started getting closer and closer, and I see no rack. And I'm like, well, it must be a doe. Got to be a big doe or something. But who, I mean, if someone shot a deer around here, we would have known about it. Me or my brother or Kayla. And as we get closer and closer, oh my goodness. It was a big old buck with his antlers cut off. We get there and you could see how big around the bases of these antlers were, where somebody had cut the antlers off the top of this deer's head. Well, the odd thing about it was the deer had looked like it had been skinned. Like the hide was still on the body, but it looked like the hide was peeled away, like they skinned it and pulled the hide off mostly to harvest the meat, was what we're thinking. The legs included, they got the quarter, you know, all the quarter meat off of it, you know, your hind quarters and your front legs and all that. Looked like they had cut all the meat off of it because of the way the hide was pulled back. It was very odd. And then also, this buck, Why didn't they just cut the head off or cut the skull plate off, you know, instead of just cutting the antlers off? I guess they just wanted to, I don't know. I guess it was in a hurry, but they obviously had a sawzall or some sort of saw to cut it off clean. Very odd. But sure enough, I mean, at this point, I'm mad. I'm not mad because somebody cut the antlers off. I'm a little upset about that, but I'm more mad at myself. I'm disappointed in myself that I didn't look harder. This deer was literally about maybe 40 yards away from where I walked. I walked 40 yards past this deer at some point during that day, at least two or three different times, and never even seen him down there. But here's another thing. Was that deer even there? Was that deer maybe tucked away right underneath that bank, the cut bank, right in that creek channel, and maybe coyotes drug it out a little bit further in the middle of it? You know, that's something to think about, because I just can't hold. I looked down there. I looked at that creek bed, and I never seen that deer sitting there. But here it is now, 6 foot away from the fence, the property line. Here's this carcass of this big old buck. And the main reason why I know it's a big old buck is because obviously you can see where its antlers have been cut off clean right at its skull plate. And obviously you can tell a small deer compared to a big deer on the base. When you got, you know, 5-inch bases, you know, diameter bases, you know that's not a year and a half old deer or 2.5-year-old deer. That's a big deer. Well, the whole head's still there. You can age a deer off their teeth. I don't know how educated or how familiar a lot of you folks are with that, but I educated myself. I knew a little bit about it, but this got me wanting to know more, because now I don't even know how big this deer was. I remember seeing it, and it seemed massive in the woods, but somebody had cut the antlers off, so I have no idea. Was it like super tall? Did it have big long main beams? Was it a 10-pointer, 12-pointer? I don't know. I had a total of probably about 5 full seconds to view this animal, and all I knew was it was a big, mature, solid body, full rack, big, mature deer. It looked like it had a lot of mass to him, and I knew that I wanted to harvest this animal. So here I am, you know, finally starting to get a closure to this whole story. But the story's not over yet. Now I'm going to try to find if maybe one of my neighbors happened to have the antlers. That's where we're going to go next, folks. Stick around. We're going to see if we can find these antlers. We'll be right back right after this.
You're listening to Outdoor America with Tommy Bench, brought to you by Bass Tank. Whatever brand of fishing electronics you need, Bass Tank carry it. Don't go away. We'll be right back. This is Outdoor America with Tommy Bench, brought to you by Baitworks. Shop where the pros shop. Here's the host of Outdoor America, Tommy Bench.
So now we're on an antler hunt, right? I finally find my deer. I finally find my deer. So upset, so aggravated at myself that I did not go down there and look harder. I'm so mad at myself. My brother even said, hey, it happens to all of us. I mean, it's not like I didn't try. I really thought I had a clean miss. Not a single drop of blood. Not a single drop of blood. But this is for sure. I mean, 99.9% sure my animal. This is the one I shot. It is exactly the perfect geographics of exactly where that deer went. It fit the description as far as being a big, mature deer, and no one else around there shot it. So here I am. Okay, now I've got to go get a hold of these landowners again. I got permission to look. So now I'm going back. Well, I'm one of the landowners. So now I'm going to the other, because they're so close together. There's like three properties that all meet real close to each other. So now Kayla and I were going to these landowners to find out, like, hey, did you find this deer? And somebody cut the antlers off. They didn't just fall off. These are not sheds. These were cut off. You could see a clean cut where a saw had went right across the top of their skull and cut the antlers off. Big bases. You know it's a big deer. You can just see the body of it. Big bone, big hoofed. Everything's big on this deer, obviously, because it's a big deer. So we get to the neighbors, knock on the door. An older gentleman answers the door, and I ask him, say, hey, I'm sorry to bother you. My name's Tommy Bench. I shot a deer over on our property, and it crossed. It was still on our property. And he said, oh, you got a deer? Go ahead and look. You can look all you want out here. And I'm like, no, sir, I found the deer. I found the deer. I don't need to look for the deer. I already found it. But the antlers were gone. And I was just curious on maybe someone on your property happened to stumble across it and thinking it was just a deer that no one knew about and maybe cut the antlers off. It's not a big deal. I mean, as far as I'm not mad at anyone, I was just really hoping to see how big this deer really was, you know, because at this point, I have no idea. I got a glimpse of it the day that I shot it, and I knew for a fact I wanted to shoot it, but I didn't have time. Like, man, that's about 150, 160 inch 10 pointer, probably a 5.5 year old deer. I didn't know this. I just knew when it walked up the hill that I for sure wanted to harvest this animal, and I knew it was a good, good deer. And he said, I don't hunt anymore. And his wife, you know, had walked up, and she said, he can't hear real well. And I said something about, you know, can I, you know, do you know if anyone may have found this deer? And he said, I don't hunt anymore. And the older lady said, I'll tell you what, if there was a deer on this property and someone found it, it'd have been this gentleman down the road. Gave me his name. I knew exactly who she was talking about. So I thought, okay. So I went to the gentleman down the road, the only person that has permission to be on this property hunting, and it is on this property. And I said, hey, my name's Tommy Bench. I was just, you know, told him the story about what I was looking for this deer. And he looked down and he said, where exactly was this deer? Because I asked him, I said, you know, you didn't happen to find a deer, you know, down on this property behind you and cut the antlers off. And he looked down and I thought, oh man, he's got him. He said, can you tell me exactly where this deer is at? And I thought, here it is. We got her. Ding, ding, ding. He's got the deer. That's why he's asking if I could tell him exactly where the deer was at. That way, if I could pinpoint, like, this is exactly where it was at, he's going to say, yep, here, sure enough, this is the one I found. Well, when I gave him the description exactly where it was at, he said, huh, well, yeah, I don't know. He said, have you talked to the neighbors? He never did say no. He never did one time say no or yes. He never said yes. He cut him off or no, he didn't. So I thought, well, dad, come, what are we? He said, well, you ever talk to Melvin? I said, no, Melvin's my buddy. We just went fishing together Sunday. I promise you, if it was him, he already knew I was looking for a deer. If he found a deer over there, I'd have been the first person he'd have told. Oh, well, I just thought maybe, you know, he lives over there. Maybe he had found it. I said, no, it wasn't Melvin. What about these people over here? And I'm like, well, they're two properties over. Oh, that don't mean anything. It ain't nothing to walk over that far. And I said, yeah, I don't know. I don't think they'd do that. But he just wanted to try to pull me in a different direction. And we talked for a while, and, you know, come to find out, he's big into trapping. And he said, well, if I'd found a deer, I'll tell you what, if I find a deer, I'm cutting its head off and it's mine. I'll cut its antlers off and it's mine. And I said, oh, yeah, I understand that. I mean, even if you found this deer and cut the antlers off, I'd just kind of like to see them. I mean, I'd honestly like to have them because it's the deer that I shot. But if you feel in your heart that they're yours and you want to keep them, then that's fine too. I'd just really like to know how big this deer was that I shot. Well, folks, I'd love to tell you this deer was a giant, an absolute giant of a buck. But I don't know. I still don't know because he never did admit or never did say he did or didn't. He said I don't know. He said, you might, maybe you should talk to these neighbors. He never did really say he didn't, but he knew I was looking for him. He never said, well, yeah, I got him, here they are, and here, you want to see him, but I'm going to keep him. So I don't know. And you know, it's just a deer. All in all, it's just a deer. It's really not worth fighting with your neighbors over. So I figured, you know, it's my own fault. It's my own fault. I should have looked better. I should have put more work into trying to harvest. As much work as I put into hunting and being successful at hunting, I'm very disappointed in myself for giving up. You know, giving up. And I did because I didn't find a speck of blood. And I really believed in my heart, you know, I had to have missed this animal. There's no way that I couldn't find a single drop of blood. At least I thought. But that just goes to show, folks, you, just because you think you missed, if, I mean, you probably didn't. If you thought you hit it, or if you thought you should have hit it, you probably did. And you need to give it every valiant effort you can. I should have just got a dog. I should have just got a dog out there that same day or the next day, and I guarantee we'd have found that deer. We'd have found that animal the next morning or that evening, you know, and I should have put more into it, and that's where I'll take the blame. That's my fault. It's lesson learned. So getting back to my original, the start of this entire show and story is, don't give up, you know, learn from your mistakes. And I will. I will promise you, the next deer that I shoot, I will search high and low. I will not stop. If I shoot at an animal, I am going to assume that animal's dead. It's like hide and go seek time, right? We got to find this thing. He's hiding somewhere, but he's got to be around. Because if I shot him, he's dead. So, and that's usually the effort that I put into it. And I guess I was just so disappointed because of the two previous bucks that I'd shot and not been able to retrieve. I'd actually watched both of them run away. And I figured this was going to be a similar story. The difference was this one wasn't hurt bad enough to still be around close. And it was just gone. But lesson learned. Like I said again, learn from your mistakes. Learn from your... From your success and learn from your failures. You just need to take everything and learn from it, and makes you a better outdoorsman, angler, whatever the case might be. So now here I am. At least now I know that closure's there. I know that animal is not still alive running around, which is a little disappointing. I almost wish I just had a clean miss and this animal could have survived and been a big deer, or been even bigger next year. That'd have been great. But that didn't happen. So it's a bummer. It's a very big bummer, but I finally got the closure that I needed. And now I met some new neighbors that I think we're going to start do a little trapping together. So I'm real excited about doing that. We're going to talk a little bit about trapping and how that affects the fishery and the predators that we trap, how that can help and what you can do to help the cause. Folks, we'll be right back right here on Outdoor America. I'm Tommy Bench, and we will be right back.
This is Outdoor America, brought to you by Baitworks. Shop where the pros shop. More with Tommy Bench after this. This is Outdoor America, brought to you by Summit Finance Group. Here's more with Tommy Bench.
So now that I have my closure on this buck, I know that I killed this animal. I finally found it. You know, I don't know who actually got the antlers off of, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter. You know, it's just a deer all in all. And but like I said, I met some pretty cool people. I got to know some of my neighbors a little bit better. And now my neighbor and I are planning to go trapping together. You know, he said trapping is kind of a lost art. You know, a lot of people just don't do it anymore. And I want to do it. I want to learn to trap and get better at it. And the one thing in particular I really would like to trap, that's them beautiful, cute little animals called otters. You know, they are adorable looking animals, but all in all, they create havoc on our river systems and lakes, in particular creeks and river systems. So here's a fun fact I'll give you. An otter eats an average of 3 fish per day, per otter. So in our little area, I've got about 3 good wintering holes that are usually low to a smallmouth. And I hope they continue to stay loaded. But this year's been tough. It has been tough fishing. I don't know if it's because the water's so low and clear, or are they gone? Are the otters eating them all? I've seen more otters this winter than the winter's just started. It's literally just started. But I've seen more otters, and my friend Jared has seen more otters than we ever have, ever. We counted 8 otters in a 3-mile stretch just last week. I make my living off putting people on smallmouth, you know, catching smallmouth, and if these otters are eating them, and I know they do, I've caught smallmouth where I've seen claw marks on the sides of these fish where the otters have actually had a hold of them, and the fish just got lucky enough to slip out of the grip. You know, they're very fortunate and lucky. But 3 fish a day per otter. So if you do the math, there's 8 otters around there eating 3 fish a day. If my calculation is correct, that's 24 fish a day. 24 fish a day coming out of these wintering holes. Well, I just don't see how the fishery is going to sustain that. I just really don't. And so guess what? I'm gonna get good at trapping otters. That's just the bottom line. I'm going to get good at trapping otters, and Kayla's kind of wanting her little otter pelt anyway. And so that's what I'm going to do. So my newfound neighbor friend, he just happened to be a pretty good trapper. And he's going to teach me. He's going to teach me the old-timer ways, how to do it, where to set up, how to set up, all that good stuff that goes along with it. And I am pumped, you know. You know, Kaylin always said everything happens for a reason, and God puts you in places that he needs you to be for certain reasons, certain times in your life, and I believe this is one of them. If it hadn't have been for this deer, I'd have never met these fine folks that I met and was able to, you know, learn about possibly trapping, and that's exactly what it led me to. I believe this is one way God said, you know, you want to learn how to trap? I'm going to lead you in the direction of a man that's going to teach you how to do it. And that's what he did. I'm super pumped to do this. Get out there. Yes, I believe these animals are cute and adorable, and if it wasn't for what they did to the fishery, you know, I probably wouldn't be that adamant about trapping them. But that, you know, here they are. They have no natural predators. I mean, what is it that's gonna that an otter has as a predator? There's really nothing. I mean, I can't think of anything because they don't. They're too big for most other animals, and they're fast and they're very smart and intelligent. So, and all they do is keep reproducing. They're making 3 to 4. They're having 3 or 4 pups every year, and they have no natural predators. So they just keep getting. They keep expanding and expanding and expanding. So it's really becoming a problem. And you know, with what I do and what my passion is, smallmouth fishing in these streams and in these other extremes, I gotta protect them. And that's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna learn. I'm gonna do it the legal way. I'm not gonna break any laws. I just wanna do. I think it's neat. I think it's a good pastime. It's something good that we should learn and keep the traditions of the Ozarks going. You know, keep these traditions going that we've had for hundreds of years that are kind of dwindling away. You know, our society is so technology driven these days that you just don't see kids getting outside. You don't see kids getting outside, getting dirty and playing in the dirt and going fishing and hunting and playing in the creeks and doing the things that we all grew up doing and took for granted, you know, back in the 80s, 70s and 80s. Here we are in the modern times. And like I said, technology driven has just kind of taken over our youth. And so I really want to try to encourage you folks to get your kids out there. If nothing else, if I can help in any way, give me a call. Give me a call, send me a message. If I can get your kids out there and show them something, teach them how to fish, teach them how to do something. You know, gun safety, you know, hunting tips, fishing tips, arrowhead hunting tips, anything I can do to help get the youth outside, I would love to be a part of it in any way. I'll be in the area doing some seminars there at the Sportsman's Expo. There's an expo coming up in January, I believe. I'll give you all the particulars real soon. Like I said, I'm going to get the YouTube channel finally launched to where you guys can follow along, listen to all the broadcast and all my tips, all my hunting tips, you know, whether it's hunting, fishing, you know, smallmouth tips, jig fishing tips, cranking tips, just line choices, knots, you name it, just from start to finish, and anything you guys want to hear about, just let me know. You know, I love to talk about what you guys want to hear about, so that's what I want to know. That's what I want to put out there, is the content that you want to hear about and learn about, especially our younger generations. You know, get them out there. If you're a younger kid, if you're a young adult, get a hold of me. I love to introduce you to anything I can in the outdoors, whether it's whatever you think you'd enjoy, or maybe you don't know, you want to have that experience to see what it's like and to see if it's something you're going to enjoy. And like I told my own brother, you know, my brother Brad, he's not a big angler, or he's not a hunter, he doesn't really do any of this stuff, and I said, you just never had the right experience. If you ever had the experience out there of having a great day on the water, catching fish, and seeing how enjoyable that you and I have seen it, then it would change his outlook on fishing and how much fun it was and how rewarding it is. You know, another thing is they have the old saying, catch a man a fish and he eats for a day, teach a man how to fish and he eats for a lifetime. You know, that's, you know, something I think is real important to instill in our youth. You know, teach them how to be self-sufficient and live off the land, so to speak. And I'm not saying we all have to be primitive, but it's a good thing to know. It's a good feeling to know that you could provide for your family. That if, you know, whether it's a fish or deer, turkey, whatever the case might be, you know, trapping animals, there's so much out there, you know, and just exploring, being out there and exploring the outdoors is just a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, and Kayla and I love it. My kids love it. Corabelle does everything with us, whether she likes it or not, but she seems to enjoy it. Of course she does. She's 18 months old, right? Or 16, whatever it is. But folks, it has been such an awesome week out here. I'm so blessed to have the opportunity to be out here. I hope that you get the opportunity to be out there in the woods, on the water. Enjoy the Ozarks, folks. Enjoy everything that God's given us out here. Till next week, hope to see you in the woods, on the water. We'll see you next week right here on Outdoor America.
You've been listening to Outdoor America with Tommy Bench, brought to you by Wholesale Batteries, the right battery the first time. Bass Tank, whatever brand of fishing electronics you need, Bass Tank carry it, and by Summit Finance Group. Join us each Saturday morning at 5 a.m. for Outdoor America with Tommy Bench on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Catch up on Outdoor America programs. Listen on demand at 610sports.com weekend programming channel. For Tommy Bench, this is Mark Miller. Thanks for listening to Outdoor America, and have a great weekend.